Glen Campbell with By the Time I Get to Phoenix. And that song, I played it because Fiona Forsyth, our guest on tonight's show, Warrington author, who's written a trilogy of books about Lucius Cestius, plus another book which we'll talk about a little bit later. He was telling us how sometimes ancient Rome, you've got to go onto Google Maps to check the layout of the land to work out how somebody gets from one place to the next. That song by Jimmy Webb is always being pulled in it, apparently, because you wouldn't go from Phoenix to Albuquerque and then Oklahoma to get to
Phoenix, you'd be going out of Arizona into New Mexico.
You wouldn't get to Phoenix that way, and it's always being pulled in it. So a lot of research is required into these books.
Yeah, you get picked up if a reader spots a mistake.
Yeah.
They let you know.
So, Rome's End, your first book, that was finished when?
2016.
Okay, so you got your words on paper or on computer. How did you then go about getting it published?
Well, the weird thing is that it never occurred to me to look for a publisher. I just put it straight onto Kindle Direct Publishing. Mm-hmm. And I did the same with the second book, because, again, I thought, nobody's going to read these. I've written them for myself. I'm publishing them so that my mum can see them. And Kindle Direct Publishing is absolutely free. You can do it for peanuts. So I had those two on. And then I wrote The Third Daughter. I had a bit of a break from Lucius. And I wrote The Third Daughter, and I thought, I'm quite excited about this one. So I asked around some friends who were writers, and one of them already had just got a contract with Sharp Books, and she said, well, they're looking for historical novels. And I thought, is it that easy? So I wrote to them and included the manuscript, and 3 days later they emailed back and said, we need to talk. And just before Christmas, I had a phone call, and he said, right, if you do X, Y, and Z, then we can get Third Daughter, Rome's End, Emperor's Servant out. And I was thinking, oh, 6 months' time, maybe a year. And the first one came out January, and the other two came out the week after.
Which year?
That would have been, oh, goodness. It was before COVID.
Right.
Just before COVID.
Wow. That must have been...
No, in the middle of COVID.
That must have been an exciting time for you.
Do you know, it was only last year. It just seems longer. Yeah, it was last January 21.
Oh, right.
Okay. 22. Good grief.
Yeah, incredible.
A lot's happened since
so
then.
So when you released them first on Kindle, you know, there may well be people listening who... Everybody's got a book in them, they say, don't they?
Do it.
Do
just
it.
Just do it.
But you've released it on Kindle. Mm-hmm. Do you have to promote that yourself then, do you?
Yeah, but to be honest, unless you are picked up by the big five publishers, you are expected to do most of your own marketing. Mm. So all authors are on Twitter and Instagram, and some of them are...
Even when you're published?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm talking about Kindle now, before you were...
Yeah.
I mean, you can generate sales through Kindle, I guess, and if there's enough people buy it, then you could attract a publisher, I guess. You might be more...
Yeah, I mean, I had not a clue... So I didn't really push it. Like I say, I was sort of emailing my mum and saying, right, if you go to Amazon, mum, you can order it. Yes, it's a paperback. I'm sorry about the print being too small. And that was it, basically. I didn't sell any copies. I didn't expect to.
So when you publish that way, you still can get printed books. It's on Kindle, but people can do like one-off copies.
Yeah, so there are a lot of small publishers... who have sprung up because of the demand for e-books. So, like I say, there's the big five, and then there's masses of other publishers, and they tend to specialise and they have niches, but most of them are looking to go straight to e-book. And because on Amazon you get the... they print on demand, and it costs nobody anything... All of them can do print on demand, but they really, really want the Kindle market. Mm. So my mum is happy because she gets a nicely formatted book with the proper cover that she can show everyone. Mm. But most of my readers are, when you break down the figures, they're in America and they're Kindle readers.
Most of them are Americans, are they?
Yes. Well, that's my biggest
show. Why do you think that is?
it's bigger. And yeah. there is such an appetite for historical fiction there. Mm. Huge.
And they love British history as well, don't they, the Americans?
Oh, my goodness, they do. Yeah. I was at a historical novelist conference in Durham at the end of last year. And I would say a good 50% of the authors there were American, mm-hmm. who were just walking around Durham going, oh, my word, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Because they just loved the cathedral, the castle. We had our dinner in the castle, and they were bowled over.
Do you know, I got... I'm chairman of Warrington History Society. I've mentioned this a few times. I think I might have told you this, Brian. I got an email through from a guy who was researching the history of a fellow called Lorenzo Dow, who was a preacher. Had a lot to do with the Independent Methodists. So he did a bit of preaching around Warrington, but he was an American. But he was in here in the early 1800s, and this guy, you know, doing his degree or whatever, was writing a book on him, and he said, I'd like to know some of the landmark places where he's apparently he lived, and he lodged underneath where we are today. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody, yeah. Peter Phillips's house here, who was the minister at the Friars Green Methodist Chapel. So there was some history there. But Warrington Bridge, and I knew about the friary, so this guy rolls up. I said, I took half a day off work, and I just met him, and I just showed him a few things. And there was reference to him doing a sermon or a lecture near the church, but also at the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. The fish market.
Before the fish market was there, and there was the cross in the centre, or the lamp light. And I was showing him these things. I said, yeah, there was a friary there at Warrington from such and such a date and all that. And that's where the bridge was, 1200s. Market's been here. So, and he was like, whoa, stop, he said. He said, you don't realise how much this history, what it means to us, because we've not got that.
Yeah.
He was fascinated.
They just love it. And then when you go to something like a national park or a state historic site, they will spend the money on preserving their history as well. Mm. It's really quite nice.
I'm trying to think, who was it that spent the fortune on the Alamo? It's one of our spent a lot of money on the Alamo, and he's got loads of artifacts about it. Yeah, he's collected them. And the Americans have just... They've actually built a museum there. I don't think it carries his name now. Wow. I don't think who it is now. I must look it up.
What attracted you then to Roman history? I know you studied the classics and so on and so forth, but why that era?
I can't remember a time when I didn't enjoy Greek and Roman myths and history. You know when you're at school and you get a reading scheme, and when the teacher first gives you the book in the reading scheme that's got stories in, and you think, whoa, look at me. And there's always a Greek myth.
Mm.
And it was, I think mine was Theseus and the Minotaur.
Yeah.
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 Rainbow books, through the rainbow.
Yeah.
And I looked for historical books in the library. I wanted to read more about the Greeks and the Romans. And I had a little diary, and I used to write stories in. And I've got the diary for 1974 that says, I want to do classics.
Yeah. Wow. Strange.
And how old would you have been then?
Nine.
So you knew then?
I read a book in which someone went to university and studied classics, and I found out what classics meant. And I thought, oh, that's just what I like.
Wow.
So I wrote it in my diary.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think the first time I read Aesop's Fables, of course.
Yes.
I mean, I'd probably be about eight. Must have been about eight, nine, probably. Reading it with an understanding of it, rather than just reading it as a story.
Yeah, but the Aesop's Fables, they're short.
Yeah.
They've got a clear message. They're absolutely ideal for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I wanted to do? When I was 9 years old, actually, I think I was 10, we were given an assignment at school, which was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm just thinking about, you say you want to study classics. People were saying, I want to be in the army, I want to be in the police force or a nurse or whatever, and this, that and the other. And I honestly remember putting, I wanted to be Sid James. But let me tell you the reason why. It's because the Carry On films, he was always happy. He was always happy. Yeah. So, and I don't forget, I was reading Dick and Dora books then, and Peter and Jane. But it brings us on to a bit of humour now. I found a song that references Caesar. Bang Bang.
It's a salad.
Bang Bang by B.A. Robertson.